Welcome to the I Read Comic Books podcast. I'm your host, Nick White. This week, I'm joined by two of my esteemed colleagues, or at least maybe both of them are esteemed. I'll let them be the judge of that. One of which is Mr. Paul Jaisley, who is an editor for comic books and a comic books contributor. And the other is James Hahn, who is a friend of the show and has recently begun contributing to the weekly Polis document. It's great to have both of you join me this week.
Hi, Nick.
Hey.
Glad to be here.
Don't push it, guys. I can tell that you're already apprehensive to the fact that I've been put in charge, and that is the actual appropriate reaction to have. Concern and fear is correct. And, you know, the holidays were right around the corner, so I suppose concern and fear are right on the docket anyway. So how were your guys' Halloweens?
Oh, I had a blast on Halloween. I went, of course, as the late, great Rowdy Roddy Piper. So,
nice.
An alarming number of people didn't know who that was, so it's a little disappointing, but I had fun regardless.
Okay. Did you go bar hopping, or did you...
Some friends of mine had rented out a room at a local drinking establishment, so I went and made the most of that. So yeah, it was a fun evening.
Okay, what about you, James?
Yeah, I just went to a small house party, nothing too exciting. My girlfriend decided that we were going to do this couple's costume, so she dressed up as a witch and I was her black cat. Unfortunately, they don't make a lot of male black cat costumes, so I had to get like a slutty...
Did you still find a way to make it sexy?
I think I did, but I mean, that's a matter of opinion.
I believe you. I will never doubt your ability to sexify a costume.
Well, thanks for the
don't know why I got so confident about that, but yeah, you're very welcome. Off to a great start.
What about you, Nick? Did you dress up?
No. I went, unless you consider that I went as the deadliest and most horrific thing on this planet, man. Which means I did nothing. No, it was pretty low-key. Jordan and I made the stupid mistake of trying to go downtown Grand Rapids and get comics, so of course things were busy and packed, and sometimes you got a little worried about whether people had costumes or not, because, you know, guess what, if you are dressed up as a police officer, don't go downtown, okay? that's just gonna, you get worried, and it's like, I don't care if you're of the, well, if you're doing nothing wrong, you don't have a reason to be concerned. Like, Jordan and I went out to dinner, and then I think someone walked in wearing like a SWAT costume, and like clearly I could figure it out, but for a split second I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, I just ordered, look, I just got my gluten-free bun, okay? That cost me an extra dollar. You're not gonna like mandatory like evacuate this restaurant or something, because I'm gonna finish this, okay? It might be smaller than your average bun and taste a little weird, but I'm gonna make the most of what I've already paid too much for. Right. So, there are certain costumes that I get a little, you know, unnerved. And then there was some guy who was either who did the same thing at the liquor store we went to that night, which again was sort of weird. You know, I was like, is this place being robbed or what? Obviously not by him, but by anyway. Anyway, so again, Halloween, it's great. It brings out a lot of social anxiety where I try to figure out if someone's dressed up as something or if that's their actual occupation. But it's Halloween. It's all the other things I hate. Darkness, nighttime, children, being forced to buy stuff and give it to people and get nothing in return. Forced electricity by keeping the lights on. It's all the stuff. It's like, why bother?
Yeah, that's tough, Nick. So sorry.
So I had a great Halloween, that being said. But I think we can all agree that comics were great or spooky or whatever stupid Halloween adjective you want to attach to something in order to attempt to be, you know, topically relevant. But what have you guys been reading lately? Did you have any time between suplexing people? What's Rowdy Roddy Piper's signature move? Fill me in.
If you remember, his finishing move was just a normal sleeper hold, so not too hard to master that. I did find time to actually read some comics. Nothing too spooky or festive for Halloween in that sense, but I guess Fade Out number 10, that's a murder mystery, so that's kind of spooky and scary in some sense.
Don't push it, Paul.
Sorry. Knowing that this is now a 12-issue, or I guess was always planned to be a 12-issue limited series, I think at first, I know you talked about this, Nick, being a little disappointed, but it kind of makes sense. I feel like it's reaching sort of a natural conclusion with issue 10. I can see it leading toward what will be a, no doubt, happy ending, right? Everyone will...
absolutely. Yeah.
Nothing bad will happen to anybody else. No, everyone get
no one's riding off into the sunset with this book. Yeah. Mm-mm.
But still a great book. It's still one of my favorite things to read every time it comes out. Batman number 45, again, a fantastic issue. I really think it's interesting that Scott Snyder almost seems more comfortable writing people other than Bruce Wayne being Batman, between this current story.
Interesting idea.
This current story, and then when he started writing detective comics with the Black Mirror, he was writing Dick Grayson as Batman, and it's really strange. I think he likes that idea of just putting someone else in the situation and using that as a way to explore, what Batman means or what makes him special, makes him unique. Sort of taking Bruce out of the equation is really, it's something that he's done a couple times, and it works really well for him. I think it kind of brings out a type of story or a type of a writing in him that I really enjoy. So,
and it also brings out a reaction in hardcore fanboys that I really enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, it's still a great Batman comic. Like, it's still a guy in a bat suit doing Batman things. Like, it's, I don't know, it's kind of all I need as a Batman fan. But probably the biggest surprise, or the book I liked the most this week that I read, was Justice League number 45. I've already raved about this title on a few episodes, and how much I'm just really enjoying the big Darkseid War storyline that's going on. This was another sort of continuation of that story. It feels like it's kind of leading into the second arc, the second part of the big event, if you will. But this issue had fill-in art by Francis Manapul, who filled in for Jason Fabok. And I really enjoyed Jason Fabok's art because it's very polished, modern superhero sort of style. Francis Manapul goes very different in his fill-in issue, and it's way more sort of experimental, obviously, because it's kind of what he does. A lot more watercolor sort of look, but
hyper-stylized, yeah.
Yeah, but it's really great because when he's choosing the colors, he does the colors with Brian Bacciolo, who he does Flash. He did Flash and Detective Comics with.
Right.
He picks like these searing bright neon blues and pinks, and it just leaps off the page. It's like one of the best looking books I've read all year, but it's still just like a Justice League story. I don't know. But it kind of fits because the story of this issue, like a spoiler alert, I guess, it's kind of about how the presence of the New Gods is affecting the Justice League. So it kind of works. These big cosmic forces are presented in this more abstract sort of experimental art style. I thought it was fantastic. Just a wonderful, wonderful issue.
Yeah, that was going to be my big question for you, was whether or not thematically or narratively they attempted to shift things in a way that would fit his art style better. And it sounds like they did.
The book, without giving too much away, it really is about how the Justice League members are being changed by the New Gods. And it really fits that theme. Especially the ending, which I won't spoil. But interesting enough, that kind of inspired me to go back and read some older Justice League stuff. So fortuitously, there was a big Grant Morrison sale on Comixology, so I grabbed all the collections of his JLA run from the 90s. And I remember reading that stuff when it was coming out. I read probably the first 20 issues or so as a teenager. That's 97, so I was 14, 15 years old. So I remember reading that stuff at the time. Going back and rereading it, I read the first volume over the week, rereading it with more background in Morrison, having read more of his other stuff, it's really interesting to see him just go all out with those characters. It's been a lot of fun to revisit that stuff.
Okay, interesting.
And finally, speaking of Grant Morrison, I finally picked up due to that sale on Comixology, the Doom Force one-shot, which is the one Doom Patrol issue I hadn't read of his run. It is a spoof of Rob Liefeld's work in the early 90s, and it's almost it's almost too good of a parody to the point where it's like not good. You know, if that makes sense. Like, Morrison just does everything that you don't like. Yeah. Exactly. It's almost too good of a parody. I enjoyed it, but that was like the one thing that Grant Morrison did with his Doom Patrol run that I hadn't read, so I was glad I was able to get a digital copy of that for cheap this week. So
okay yeah, that's good. Did your Grant Morrison purchases begin and end with JLA, or did things spiral? Not that I know what that's about.
No, I stuck to my guns. I picked up the JLA stuff. I picked up the Doom Force one shot. Luckily, when it comes to Grant Morrison, I already have everything else that was on sale, so I didn't have to buy much more than that.
Whew.
Yeah,
looks like things you know, that was a close one, Paul. That was a close one. What about you, James? What did you read?
Well, let's see. Hellboy the Wild Hunt, which I believe is the ninth trade of that series. Hellboy, I always love. In this particular one, like, some of the trades of Hellboy are more like the anthology style, where it's telling like just like a 2 or 3 issue story. But a monster, but this is more like his main storyline, if you will, where it's talking about his origins. Okay. And like, it gets like, everyone kind of knows about Hellboy's father, who's the demon, but people don't know about his mother. So like, now people are trying to fight to get him to be the king of this kingdom or that kingdom, and Hellboy's just like, I only do what I want, and I just like blowing stuff up. Yeah, that's Hellboy.
Interesting. So it's not as much interchangeable like a lot of the other trades, at least from what I know. You could literally shuffle them in any order and read them, and for the most part, you will not be in any sort of disadvantage.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
You're saying this actually has more of a overarching.
Mm-hmm. This is kind of leading into like the Hellboy in Hell series, if you guys have read that at all.
Okay.
Anyway, the next one I read was the Kurosagi Corpse Delivery Service, which is a manga that I heard was highly reviewed. It's basically about this group of people who can detect spirits that have not been laid to rest correctly. So they're still like haunting around and messing with people. So they go find these bodies that are often like not buried or whatever, and they put them in their correct place so that the spirit will go back to sleep or whatever. So that was interesting. I'm really getting into kind of the Japanese comics lately, just because they have a different perspective, I think, than a lot of the Western stuff. Mm-hmm. So that was a pretty good one. And I also read Ancient Reptiles. Have either of you guys read that one at all?
No.
I've seen it on shelves, and it looks really weird, and it's got a very distinctive, interesting art style to it.
So that,
but I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, basically that is it's one of these visual storytelling, so I don't think there's any text at all. It's basically just these dinosaurs, various species of dinosaurs, and they're all kind of fighting to survive and like establish territory and stuff. So in the one I read anyway, it was mostly this like T-Rex mama and these little velociraptor dudes who are just like huge dicks, always coming around and stealing the eggs, you know, like velociraptors do.
Yeah, what's the deal? Like, who's in charge of their image control? Because between this and Jurassic Park, like, they are just getting, okay, like, Jurassic World, maybe their PR person got, like, things under control when Jurassic World rolled around, but I won't say anything more, because I don't want to ruin that movie, even though I'm assuming you've already seen it or don't care, but, so you're saying it's basically gang warfare amongst dinosaurs?
Yeah. I thought it was amazing, and I want to collect them all now.
Interesting.
Okay.
Other than that,
usually that notion is reserved for Pokemon, but we'll let you extend it.
But then I also
we might have just used a trademarked phrase right there.
Oh yeah. But I also picked up a few comic bundles, as I want to do. I also saw the Grant Morrison sale, and picked up a bunch of Doom Patrol on Paul's recommendation on this podcast. And I also picked up a couple.
And hopefully you enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah. So far, anyway.
Okay, good.
And Invisibles, which is also pretty awesome. And now the Humble Bundle has started putting out 2 comic bundles per week, which, you know, is basically just twice as much money out of my pocket. But I got a bunch of...
I was going to say, this is sounding like... bad. Like, I feel like the tone of your voice should be reaching sort of a uncertain tone as to how you're handling these situations. But you seem pretty in control, which worries me. Because, like, aren't there like 10 trades of the Invisibles?
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
There's a lot.
I've already read about half of them, I think. So I'm working on getting through the rest of them. And on digital, it's a lot cheaper than going to the store. So
yeah. Okay. Doesn't mean I'm not worried. I might have to check in with you.
Should always be worried.
That's right. This is. I read comic books, and we're throwing threats around now. Okay. Let me see. I read a couple things. I finally got around to We Stand on Guard number 4. I thought it was good, but it has me wondering if this book is reaching a point where it's forgetting that when you keep killing off characters as frequently as this book is, who's left? Who is left? So, yeah, might want to think about that, Brian K. Vaughan. Yeah, I finally read The Colonel of Two Worlds. I thoroughly enjoyed that as a masterpiece of not that overt marketing and all sorts of ad placement and all sorts of ways that anybody who has any idea of when they're being sold something will clearly get all of it because it's all there. I think my favorite part... was when, and you know what, I'm not gonna fucking say spoilers, okay? This is like a corporate run issue. Like, no one's gonna be like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm not to that issue yet, you ruined it. Look, either you've read it or you haven't, and if you haven't read it, you need to read it. And if you still haven't read it, me saying this will not spoil things, but I love the fact that it's Mirror Master, and I forget the other one. I think it's Captain Cold. And they're about to be ushered off to jail at the end. And Colonel Sanders says, no, I have a better idea. So instead of bringing them to jail, which is what should happen according to the American legal system, it turns into a situation of indentured servitude where they're forced to work off their time at his restaurant, mm-hmm. which first off, like, way to circumvent the American legal system, Colonel Sanders. That's kind of weird. Secondly, what does it say about your restaurant that we're insinuating that some of your employees are more or less being forced to work there as indentured servants? kind of concerning. I think my favorite part, though, is that this actually builds upon the events of Forever Evil. I think that was the most hilarious panel when it's like, you remember when those weirdos came through from Earth 3? And I'm like, oh my god, they're actually trying to make this canon.
I mean, if you're gonna do that, if you're gonna like make an advertisement, you know, go all out, right?
Just, exactly, play into canon. I loved it. I thought it was funny, sometimes in ways it shouldn't have been, and I really love that at the end. Of course, they eat at KFC, and like I said, that apparently. KFC is now the new hotspot for criminals to work, which I thought that was a really, really weird sort of way of dealing with that. But I read that.
Yeah.
And I read a little bit of my Aliens Omnibus I've been working on. I read some of the new Suicide Squad trade. First one came out of that. Kind of weird for a book that got a relaunch, got a lot of press. And of course, with the movie right around the corner, and arguably that movie getting a lot of good press, possibly even more than the Batman versus Superman. In fact, I don't think that's a stretch to say at all. It's really weird that this book is really... It's got a lot of artists. It's got a lot of artists, and they circulate a bunch, and a bunch of the issues have 2 or 3 artists on them. It's even doing that sort of thing, which, Paul, I'm sure you have a better idea of than I, where you actually have someone doing the breakdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Which is Denerick, which, correct me if I'm wrong, that guy sort of like outlines it, and then someone else comes in and does the finishes, so it's kind of a 2-part pencil process. Yeah, basically,
somebody just laying out the page, like, these were the panels to go, these were the characters are, so it's a very, like, thumbnail sketch, basically, Yeah.
Right, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but generally speaking, when you see sort of a, instead of a penciler, you see a breakdowns in finishes, that's sometimes a little bit of a cause for concern that things might not be great.
They're rushing. There's somebody's rushing to get that out.
Exactly. So, yeah, I enjoyed what I read, but it was a little bit weird. The only thing I'm going to briefly bring up is Book of Death 4 came out. It was absolutely fantastic. I didn't even want to wait till it got to my shop on Saturday, or when I got to my shop on Saturday, so I bought it online. It had a very interesting ending, and they did deliver the goods on actually killing a character off. It was a prominent one, and they very cleverly sort of subverted the idea of killing off a character and the character's inevitable return, and I don't want to give any more away at this point, but it was very well done, even though they have already clearly suggested that this character is more in a state of limbo than death. But again, I thought it was very well done. That's what I read this week. And now that we've clearly all probably meandered on for a little bit too long, we're going to take a break. Xander's going to put some music in here that will establish the idea that we are a credible podcast, and we'll see you in a few minutes. It's that time where we pick our comics, and it's a great time because it forces everybody to pick one book so things don't get out of hand, and we end up listing off way too many things, and this podcast just got oddly meta. That being said, Paul, what's your pick for this week? What book are you most excited for, slash think has cultural significance, slash justified in whatever other way you see fit?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, I've been kind of on a big Justice League kick lately, at least this past week, where, you know, I was reading The Dark Side War, and I'm reading old Justice League issues. So this week, that's one of the one-shots that's spinning out of the Justice League Dark Side War event, and that's the awkwardly titled Justice League : Dark Side War : The Flash One Shot by Rob Williams with art by Jesus Marino.
I feel like I don't even know you now, Paul. You're reading big two events. Reading one shots that tie into those events, and on top of that, you're reading ones that are awkwardly multi-colon titled.
Yeah.
I mean, who are you,
Nick? I look at myself in the mirror every day and ask myself that same question. So
when you're reading stuff like this, you ought to be. I mean, I don't know how not. It's Rob really, Williams. That's good.
It's really interesting. Justice League is a title that I really want to like, but since the New 52 relaunched, I haven't really dug it. So having this big event, the Dark Side War, has kind of brought me back into it. And I'll, you know, admittedly, it is kind of a dumb superhero comic, but apparently that's kind of what I want right now because I'm really enjoying it. Not to give too much away, but what's happening is that the Justice League is being affected by the presence of the New Gods. Again, that's something that I'm always going to pick up and enjoy if the New Gods show up. They're being affected by the New Gods' presence on Earth, and this one focuses on the Flash, who, spoiler alert, has become the God of Death, the Black Racer, in a recent issue of Justice League. So I'm curious to see how they handle this. Again, normally I'm not big on big crossover events, but because this isn't really crossing over with other books, it's sort of self-contained and just having these six one-shots spin off of it, I'm kind of just going whole hog and enjoying it as a big, dumb superhero event, which I'm enjoying. So Rob Williams is a writer I've always liked, so I'm kind of curious to see him handle a sort of book like this that ties into a larger event. He's writing Martian Manhunter right now, which I'm really enjoying. Jesus Marino...
He also wrote the Royals, right?
Royals, yep.
Okay.
He's written a lot of Judge Dredd stuff, so guy's right up my alley. I dig his stuff a lot, so it's cool to see him writing a book like this.
And who's on the art again?
Jesus Marino.
Okay.
It rings a bell, but I couldn't tell you what exactly I've read of that he's done. So, yeah, I don't know. Something about this. I'm just enjoying a sort of renaissance in some sense of Justice League stuff. I like that it's a big over-the-top story that is kind of corny and feeds off of obscure DC continuity. That's right up my alley. You know, that's stuff I enjoyed reading as a kid and a teenager, and it's kind of bringing me back to that. So nice little trip down nostalgia lane in some sense.
Absolutely. Now, does this tie in at all to the fact that does this loop in at all to the New Gods introduction in Green Lantern, or is this a separate sort of thing?
I feel like it's a separate story.
Okay.
So, you know, I'll go ahead and spoil it. So if you want to read Justice League Dark
Side
War...
That's fine. That's what we do on this podcast. Unspoiled. We attempt to not ruin things. We make about 20... We make it about 20 seconds, and then we just spill it all. So we're consistent. Yeah, anyone who's listening to this podcast knows at this point...
what to expect.
That we're gonna tell them. So go ahead. Let's tell me about it.
So if you remember when Final Crisis was happening, there was a lot of suggestion in the marketing and interviews with the creators that... what was going to happen was that the New Gods would die and the Justice League would kind of take over for the New Gods in some sense.
We're talking all the way back, like Grant Morrison, Final Crisis, right?
Final Crisis,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
So that didn't happen, obviously. That's what happened in Darkseid War. Darkseid is killed by the Black Racer. He's killed by the Anti-Monitor, who's controlling the Black Racer. And Batman sits down on Metron's Mobius chair and becomes... the god of knowledge. The Flash becomes the god of death when he's absorbed by the Black Racer. Lex Luthor kind of becomes Darkseid. He absorbs the Omega Force and becomes Darkseid. So it's basically these characters are taking over for the New Gods, are being radically affected. So it's pretty exciting stuff. I mean, it feels like a big event, and it's kind of weird that it's not crossing over. It's staying self-contained. So it kind of makes it feel more important in a weird way. I don't know.
No, you're absolutely right. Geez, when you describe all of that, I don't know why this hasn't been turned into a company-wide thing where they're attempting to loop in books that have no business being involved. Like that's my indicator of a true event.
Yeah.
Paul. Like when they're roping in books that have no business, like that's when I know it's time to pay attention. That's when I know things are getting good. Like when that happens, and then they're like, you better start reading Grayson and Gotham by midnight. That's when I know things are really shaping up to be something fantastic.
Yeah, and I think that's why I'm liking it so much, is that it feels like a unique story. I haven't read any interviews with Geoff Johns where he talks about this. It's like I'm just watching it unfold in issues of Justice League, and it's really exciting that in that sense. It feels like an old school DC superhero book, and that's really, really what's doing it for me. So, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. What about you, James?
So my pick for this week is a number one from Image called Monstrous. Story is by Marjorie Liu and art by Saina Takeda. I probably messed those both up, but...
okay, I'm sure you nailed those perfectly, so we've got nothing to worry about. That's okay. So I'm just messing with you. Yeah. We screw up names. That's one of our trademarks on this podcast.
Certainly. I try to meet the standards of the podcast. So this book is supposed to be... what I see here is steampunk meets kaiju, which, you know, these are two things that I am very passionate about. Is basically about this young girl who has a psychic link to this insanely powerful monster, and then that basically throws her into this big war between humans and monsters. It's whenever Image does like one of these huge triple-sized first issues, like this is a 66-pager with no ads for $5. It's hard to go wrong there.
Nice.
And
Jeez.
The art looks really amazing to me. For the number two, they've already kind of spoiled the cover. It's like she has this crazy like wolf head with a bunch of eyes on her arms and stuff. It looks like it's exactly down my alley. So I'll be picking that one up.
Nice.
Yeah, you're not the only one. I know Jordan, my friend Jordan was looking through the previews and he saw that, and anything sort of like kaiju based he tends to pay attention to, so
I mean, I'm reading Kaiju Max it's a couple others, so
okay. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that title plays out, because a lot of times with Image, and Mike will attest to this, sometimes they end up doing a huge oversized first issue and then it ends up putting them in a really weird / bad place scheduling wise for the rest of the issues. Just ask Mike about The Dying and the Dead, because apparently they did the same sort of strategy and it kind of screwed the pooch on future issues. So I hope that's not the case with your book, but I'm just going to warn you up front. We've talked about it before. Image issue scheduling has gotten real fun within the last
year. Telling me, dude, like, if anybody on this podcast is reading Airboy, I've been waiting for Airboy number 4 for probably 6 months now, and I've heard absolutely nothing. Like, they'll change the date on the image website, and then it'll pass by that date, and they leave it, and it just takes, it's just, I'm just waiting forever and ever.
It reminds me of that Douglas Adams quote, and you know what? I was waiting for the moment on this podcast to quote something I knew and probably butcher it too. But he said, I love deadlines. I love the sound they make as they go whooshing by. So Douglas Adams has now been mentioned on this podcast, and that's a personal goal of mine. So
what about you, Nick? What's your pick?
Well, I haven't read it yet. It's not the future. I'm excited for Ninjak number 9. I've picked Ninjak before, but I'm picking it again, partially because my poll for this week is really, really small, but also because Ninjak has just been a fantastic month after month as he goes after this organization called the Shadow 7, and it's kind of one of those fun things where it's a group of super, super villains, and they all have weird kind of odd abilities. There's this one guy who has this, like, weird silver suit, and he's called the Barb, and he has a huge beard, and he controls drones with his mind. And there's this other one called, I can't remember her name, but she has like a distended jaw, and she had like surgical operations, so she can, like, she's got this crazy like shark-like jaw, and, you know, bites people. Like I said, it reminds me a lot of like old school Bond villains where they've got all these ridiculous, you know, eccentric abilities. And last month, we actually had this hilarious guy called Fitzy, who had mastered all of the fighting styles known to the world. It was sort of that, you know, I've uploaded all these styles into my mind, and I can do everything. And it's hilarious, because going into this issue, I was like, how the fuck is Ninjak going to fight this guy? And even on the cover, they clearly show them fighting, so it's like, I know what I'm getting into. But then the whole issue is him relaying the story of how he grew up, and as the story goes on, I'm like, this guy doesn't seem like a bad guy. Like, I'm worried. Like, are we really going to fight this guy? Because he honestly doesn't seem evil. And then at the end of him relaying this narrative of his story, Ninjak just simply goes, gee, I guess we shouldn't have beaten up on each other for a while. And then you realize the fight's already happened. Oh my gosh. It was hilarious. I loved it. I'm sure it pissed off some people, but I thought it was a clever twist. And then it was kind of weird, because in the end, Ninjak goes, well, I still have to turn you over to my boss, and incapacitates him, which was kind of weird and morally perplexing. And I'm going to have to think on that one a bit more. But this month, not much else to say other than we've got Clayman on art. He's fantastic. Juan Jose Reap is also doing the backup art duties for the backup story. Again, I love his stuff. And we have the return of Roku, who is this weird character we had in the first arc of Ninjak, who is this another one of these crazy assassins who has this really long red hair that possesses weird abilities and the tensile strength of, like, sharpened steel. So, you know, she can cut through stuff with it, and it, you know, makes for some great action scenes. So, as always, Matt Kent, I don't know how he does 90 or 98 books a month, but his level of quality is just astounding. So that's my pick for this week. I'm really excited for it. And we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to discuss single issues versus trades. And yes, you do have to pick a side, because that's how life works, or something. Well, we're back, and it's time to have a more in-depth discussion about this week's topic, which Mike was nice enough to provide for us. And Mike posed it as a versus argument, which are always my best. When you can set something in opposition to something else, it makes me pick a side, which makes things massively easier and removes any sense of nuance, which is, I guess, what American politics are about. Whoa, this just got deep. And Mike put the argument as trade versus single issue. And then I believe his words were, how do you pick? Which was an interesting thing, because I extrapolated that argument into about 18 billion different things, not really certain what he was getting at. So that being said, we are going to dissect this and go into it on multiple levels, except not really dissect because I always hated those parts of school and the formaldehyde made me sick, and I just generally was not comfortable with facing corpses of animals. Okay, sixth grade revisited aside, I think the first question of trade versus single issue is how do you pick which method to use? And I think, at least for most of us, the idea of trade versus single issue is not really an either-or argument, because most of us use both. Personally, I myself still read a bunch of books in trade, and I still read a bunch of books in singles, and of course I have my reasons for that. But let me just throw that out to you guys first. Are you an either-or sort of person? Have you successfully picked a side, or do you vacillate to some degree? Vacillate, that's a good word. We're going to keep that in the podcast to make me look smart.
You're making good use of that word today calendar you got, Nick.
I was about to say, if you were here and looking at my desk, I'm just flipping through this thing, and if you hear other words that make me artificially sound smart, that's why. What about you, Paul? Are you an either or? Have you successfully embraced the idea of, you know, setting one thing against another, or are you somewhere in the middle because you can't make up your mind?
Well, boy, I really only read single issues, and that's 98% of the time. And I really can't give a good argument why, other than...
You don't have to. This is America.
Okay.
That's fine.
Because that's what's right, and that's what we're supposed to do. That's what the Bible says.
Beautiful. Xander, this is where we put in, you know, the national anthem right here.
Yeah, swelling in the background.
And then if you can't see it, I'm just gonna give you just a visual soundscape here. The American flag is billowing perfectly.
Because that's how I started reading comics, to be honest.
Okay.
I started reading when I was, you know, a kid. So late 80s, early 90s, going to the comic shop once a month, basically, and just buying stuff that looked cool. Buying stuff that Wizard Magazine told me was cool, because I had a subscription to Wizard Magazine, if you remember that wonderful publication. Which led to reading a lot of crappy X-Men comics. Sorry, Mike.
Ouch.
But that's how I read comics, was just single issues. And when I stopped reading comics, sort of the early 2000s, I wasn't reading stuff regularly. I was just reading more collections, which I guess are trades in some sense, like collections of, you know, I would pick up Watchmen or Dark Knight Returns, classic books like that that have been collected. So that's what I think of a trade, is a collection of issues, sort of standalone. When I got back into reading comics about 5 years ago now, trades were like a big thing that everyone was reading, but I tended to still like to buy single issues. It's just been sort of a force of habit more or less anything else. The few things that I do pick up in trade are situations where it's a book that's been out for a while, so it's hard to collect the single issues of. I mean, for example, the most recent thing I've been buying in trade is Zero by Alice Cobb.
Okay.
Sure. Just because I wasn't buying it until... You know, it was already the second volume had come out. So, and that I just bought cheap on Comixology because there was a sale. So it's not something I really sought out to buy in trade. It's just, oh, this is convenient to read this way, so I'm going to buy it. So, yeah, 9 times out of 10, I'm buying stuff in single issues. And the only time I'm buying trades, if it's something that's been out of print or, you know, I can find it cheap that way. So it's not really part of my regular reading routine to buy or read trades. But I feel like I'm an odd man out in that scenario because I know everybody else has a few things that they read in trade, and I guess I'm curious why you would pick to read some series in trade or not.
Okay. Have you noticed any significant shortcomings to your method? Are there moments? I mean, you briefly illustrated right then and there that there are certain times where you've been forced to deviate, but otherwise, I mean, when you were growing up, was that at a point, and I know they've talked about this, and I think this precedes you to some extent, but... You know, there were times where you would go to get your comics, like 1 month the comic you wanted would be there, and then the next month all of a sudden it just wasn't there. And so you had to deal with these weird inconsistencies, especially in places like drugstores or wherever, where obviously comics were not their thing.
Yeah. I mean, my earliest remembrances of buying comics were just going, like you said, to the supermarket or the corner drugstore or whatever and just buying stuff off the rack, but I wasn't a collector at that point. I just bought stuff that looked cool.
You weren't concerned about all of a sudden issue number 9 was nowhere to be found.
I was just buying, hey, the Green Lantern looks cool, I'll buy that. You know, when I became more serious about it, that's when I was going to an actual comic shop and having a pull list and stuff like that. So that really wasn't an issue at that point. Nowadays, you know, the only inconvenience is finding room for them all. I have all of my long boxes like under my bed, and I'm getting to the point where I'm like, well, I'm going to have to start getting rid of some of these because there's no longer any room to put in anymore under my bed. I don't really have a bookshelf to put trades either, so there's not really, it wouldn't be more convenient to buy trades. The most convenient thing to do would be switch all to digital, which I'm not ready to do. And that's more, again, just force of habit. So, I don't know. The only shortcomings, I think, is cost, because it's obviously cheaper to buy and trade, and space, but apparently those aren't concerns for me, because I haven't switched, so I don't know.
Stuck in my ways, and yeah, no exactly. One's going to tell me what to do. Beautiful, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, yeah. What about you guys? Why did you pick some things in trade and some things not? I guess I'm curious why you'd make that distinction.
I'm also kind of a newer comic book reader, I guess you'd say. Similar to Paul's situation, I read a lot of them kind of in like the high school time, and then I just kind of switched more to like reading prose and stuff for a while, and now I'm coming back pretty much up till when I got real serious about comics and started getting onto this podcast is when I switched over to reading pretty much exclusively singles. I still do read a few things in trade, though. Chew is one that I read in trade, just because I already have so many of those in trade that I feel like I should finish it out in trade, too. Saga, I read in trade. Really, the singles, I guess, for me are more about finding new series. Like, the first 10 to 20 issues, I really like to read month to month just to get a good feel for it. I still do pick up trades on occasion. Usually it's more of a price point thing, like especially with the Image $10 volume 1s. I'll buy a volume 1 of pretty much anything just because it's so cost effective.
Has that always worked? Have there been, I was going to say, like, is there like an Image number 1? I'm just, you know, not to tangent too much, but have there been any of these that have been like bona fide duds in your mind where you're like,
I would say no.
Has that ever backfired
yet? No. I'm usually pretty happy with every Image book I pick up.
You heard it here first. James James is just Image Comics. He's your guy. He's plugging you nonstop.
I'm an Image fanboy, and I'm not ashamed of it.
There we go.
And now, we should be clear. We'll be clear that you are in no way paid by Image Comics to say that. That's of your own accord. And
no,
your
I pay Image Comics. Okay. They do not pay me.
Good point.
Yeah, very true. Very true. At least for me, what's I think a little bit maybe different than both of you guys is that while I started with trades, like most people do, I actually stuck with trades for a pretty long time before I switched over to singles. And so it sort of created an interesting situation where I, for example, like with New 52 Batman, when that rolled around, I was still primarily reading trades. And I was probably reading Batman exclusively in trade all the way up through, I want to say, Zero Year. All the way up to Zero Year. I was actually reading that exclusively in trade. And then at that point, my local comic book shop had, at that point I was also sort of just here and there picking up singles, just without a pull. At that point, my comic book shop finally convinced me, you know, to switch over and actually have a pull. And I got the rest. But what's interesting for me is there was sort of a weird overlap area here and there where, you know, I was transitioning books from trades over to singles. And so in a couple of weird spots, I would end up with just a weird overlap where I was buying the same material, you know, 3 or 4 issues of the same material once or twice. And but that's just what's going to happen when you do that. And there are still some books that I actually do pick up in both formats. There aren't many, and I realize it's sort of crazy, but in terms of, there are some books that I just like to have collected as well. And so like Batman, I do actually collect both ways, but otherwise I've pretty much moved over to singles. But what I think is sort of interesting is that, especially with the Image price point deal and things like that, I found myself oddly locked in to the trade format on certain books that maybe I wouldn't otherwise do that way, like Outkast. When Outkast came out, I'm not going to go through the whole, you know, Robert Kirkman is overrated bandwagon, because I think in some ways he is, some ways he isn't, but we'll leave it at that. I don't want to get Mike too mad, but Mike was like, you got to read Outkast, got to read Outkast. And that was, it was a huge trade. I think the issue number one was like literally like three normal issues together. So the first trade was just, it was like 10 issues or something like that. And so I read Outkast, I started reading Outkast in trade. And ever since then, I've just, Outkast Volume 2, I just picked that up yesterday, and there are just certain books that I started them in trade, and I'm just continuing them that way. And sometimes it's like more of a priority thing. Like a lot of times when I'm looking through the previews catalog, I'll be like, I want to read that book in singles, and I want to read that book in singles. And then there will be like two more beneath it on the short list, and I'll be like, I still want to look at those at some point. Just, you know, money-wise or priority-wise, they're not there. And so I just, as they call it, I trade weight it. And then of course, when that rolls around via Image, it's a much more effective price point to try it. So, that's sort of how I've handled it. But that's not to say there aren't issues with trades. There definitely are. And I think that's another topic that really, merits some discussion. Because at least for me, there have definitely been issues here and there where the trade format has had its shortcomings. I don't know about you guys.
See, I think I prefer single issues, maybe because that's what I read, but I think I just prefer the format of just having, you know, 22 pages or 20 pages or whatever of a story. You know, it's, I get it every month. I don't have to wait. Like you said, trade waiting can be an issue, especially if it's smaller publishers where their issues aren't coming out regularly. That wait can be a lot longer. And it bothers me when I notice something I'm reading in single issues is clearly being written for a trade. There are certain writers or certain series where I feel like I'm not getting a full satisfying 20 issues worth of comics each issue, where it's like, oh, you're pulling this out or making it longer so it'll fit into a trade. You're taking a story that could be three issues, you're making it six issues so it fits a trade. That bothers me, and I notice it more and more sometimes. That's why I dropped Walking Dead. That's a lot of stuff I've kind of walked away because I see that happening. But also it's convenient because it's easier for me to drop a book when it's getting boring. You know what I mean? Since I'm like, all right, I can tell this issue or something's happening, or issue to issue is getting kind of dull. I can just leave the book. I don't have to pick up a trade and be disappointed in some sense. Do you find it, reading certain things in trade more satisfying than single issues? Is there something about the format that you find more satisfying as a reading experience, I guess?
Absolutely. And we've discussed this before, but first off, there definitely are authors that even on the back of Warren Ellis's recent Injection, the book is described on the back of the book as a serialized graphic novel. Okay, so, like, sure. There's no bones about the fact that even Warren Ellis is like, look, I released this in parts because that's how the business works. But really, it shouldn't have been. And we've discussed the multiple reasons why, financially and publicity-wise, OGNs are not always the smartest thing to do if you can work around it.
Right.
But Warren Ellis... Definitely. Read it in trade. Hickman, read it in trade. Sometimes Grant Morrison, sometimes not. Read it in trade. And it's unfortunate because you'd like to say, well, can't you just release this as one book? But as we've discussed before, publicity-wise, it's really hard to drum up enough attention and support a lot of times for OGNs.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with the idea that there are certain books that read... better in trade. Those are just a few of the things that come to mind for me. What about you, James? Have you transitioned any books over from trade or not that you have felt have been better one way or the other? Or,
well, I think for me, any book that's coming out within like the last couple weeks or month or so, I'll just go and pick up all the singles at my comic shop. But for anything older than that, a lot of times it's just easier to go straight to trade or try to find it on Amazon or something. Especially like old Hellblazer stuff. Like, I once had a fantasy where I would actually have all the Hellblazers in single issues, but I think I've pretty much given up on that because I know at least some Hellblazer books are not even worth getting, so it would be more of a hassle than
it's worth. I was going to say, let me step in and tell you that that's, as someone who's read a lot of Hellblazer, owning all of it should not be something that one desires. Minor Hellblazer thing. That book has had so many writers and so many different artists they've each one has made it their own, and for better or for worse, there are arcs I would recommend, and there are arcs that I would avoid like the plague.
Absolutely.
But with stuff like that, you've abandoned that notion, and that's where things stand.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much only read the singles now for anything modern. I think it's easier for me to justify buying a $4 comic, like a bunch of $4 comics, as opposed to buying like two or three trades, just because I get a lot of different kinds of stories, and it really kind of satisfies a lot of different niches for me. Versus reading a trade, I kind of usually with a trade, I'll sit down and read it in like an hour or two, and then I'm done, and I'm just sitting there waiting for the next one, so... For books I'm like really excited about, I definitely want to be reading it month to month. Just so, I mean, a single issue is only a 5 or 10 minute read, but some single issues have really blown me away, and I guess that's true of trades too. But single issues, I think, are really kind of succinct, like chapters of the book, so you can really compare those easily issue to issue. Versus if I get a trade that's not very good, then I'm like, oh, that series is probably over for me.
Yeah, and that is kind of the interesting, I think, juxtaposition between the two, is that with single issues, it's a lot easier and a lot quicker to sort of discern when your book is starting to tank. I think it's a lot easier to just go, okay, this is getting kind of weird. Whereas, for example, I recently read Deadly Class Volume 2, and I was not a fan. And that put that book right on the fence for me. And if it was single issues, I could have just flat out said, you know what, I'm stopping this book, I'm done, end of story. Or I could have shifted it over to trade, which is always a nice sort of backup plan if you want to do it. But I had to go, okay, I guess... I'll wait, and I'll get trade number 3, and we'll make the determination there. So I had to wait a couple months, and now I've got it, you know, sitting on my shelf, and at some point I'm just gonna have to figure that out. But of course, it's taken a long time, and because I was already collecting it in trade, it wasn't like I could plunk down another like $3 and see if it continued to be crap. I had to put down the 15 to keep my system in order, and I think that's probably another one of the interesting nuances I've noticed of the trade versus singles argument, is that sometimes however you've started building your collection can put you into some really interesting situations where in an attempt to preserve the sanctity of your system you end up doing some fairly irrational / bad / financially harmful things just to keep things in order. I don't know if this is true for you guys or what, because like sometimes people are like, oh my gosh, Sandman Omnibus number 1, it's a beautiful book, it's great, it's huge, it's oversized, it's fancy, but now I have to go get Sandman Omnibus number 2.
Oh my goodness.
Or the fact that like you can buy Walking Dead literally in I think like 4 different formats these days. It's like singles, there's the smaller trades, there's the bigger trades, and then there's like the huge ones. And I think sometimes you can say, well, I want to do trades or I want to do singles, but however your system has evolved, it sort of, unfortunately, depending upon how OCD you are, it locks you into that. And forces you to continue. I mean, there's a reason that like I really enjoy Nailbiter, and I would maybe switch it over to trade. I would maybe switch it over to singles. Except I've already got the first 3 volumes in trade. So keeping up appearances, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, as I said before, a lot of it is just kind of habit. It's like what you've always done or what you've used to do. So that's how you do it. Like, I know it'd be more cost effective to probably switch to trade on some of this stuff, but that's not as important as just the habit of it. You know what I mean? There is something about having your weekly pull list that's you're just set in your ways. You know, it's like, I know if I walk into the store this week, these books are going to be there for me. There's not much thought involved. So I kind of like that, especially when it comes to single issues, because I forget to buy stuff a lot of times if it's not on my pull list. So when it comes to trades, if I don't think of it, I'm not going to pick it up. And that becomes really a problem when you get over to digital, because before they offered the ability to subscribe to something digitally, I would just forget to buy it all the time if it was something I was buying digitally.
I remember this. Yeah.
So, again, it's for me, maybe it's just, for me, it really comes down to habit. It's what I'm doing. So
And ritual, maybe, to some extent?
Yeah, again, ritual. And I really like the ritual of just reading a single issue as opposed to a trade. And I can't really give you a good explanation why. It's just what I like to do, and it's something about having a little self-contained story like that. And I like there being issues that stand out. So, you know, buying older stuff in trades, obviously, like you said, James, it's very easy to buy older stuff in trades. But, you know, when I got back into comics, I was reading a lot of Grant Morrison stuff. I made it a point to get Doom Patrol in single issues because I was finding a bunch in dollar bins. So that's how I built up. I got a complete run of his Doom Patrol, you know, 15, 20 years after the fact in single issues out of dollar bins. But I enjoyed reading it that way because single issues would stand out a lot more. Like, oh, this issue on its own is a great issue. And because I wasn't reading it as part of a collection, it felt more important in a weird way. It really stood out in my mind because it was self-contained, literally, you know, as a single issue. So I don't know. I personally like that, but I couldn't explain why. It's just, you know, one of those things.
No, I have to completely agree with you. Like, back when I was you know what, they need to coin a term for people addicted to trades, so then I can use that obnoxious term a lot. A trade-ite, a tradee, I don't know. Anyway, back when I was hardcore trade, and I was like, oh man, I know what's up, you know, I'm putting books on my bookshelf, and those idiots are putting them in plastic bags, and they're weird, and look at me, it's on a bookshelf, so it's respectable, and I'm in control of things. Back then, the notion that someone would like read like 20 pages of one thing and then jump to another book and read 20 pages of that and then jump to another one and read 20 pages of that, I was like, well, that's weird. Like, why would you want to do that? Isn't that going to be confusing? And isn't that going to sort of like mess you up? And isn't like, why? It just seems like all over the place. And like, can't you concentrate on something for a while? But you're completely right. I think reading singles allows you to appreciate things more. I also, like you said, I like the ritual that comes along with it, and I also really appreciate the idea that you can, you know, I can read, you know, The Simpsons and get, you know, humor and comedy for 20 minutes and then shift to something a little bit more serious like Ninjak, and then maybe hard shift to something even more serious with Southern Bastards, and I can sort of adjust whatever I'm reading to, you know, my mood or how much time I have to read or how I'm feeling, and it can sort of accompany, you know, how things are going in my life. And I think that with trades, a lot of the time, what can happen is that reading it in a trade format sort of dilutes the importance of the whatever issues are really, really good, because mm-hmm. most of the time when you ask someone, you know, what did you think of this trade, they give you the overall impression, which is okay, but it doesn't really allow you to focus on when an issue goes really, really well or when an issue goes really, really bad, because of course it's on the whole, and I think sometimes the better parts or sometimes allowing you to focus on maybe, you know, when a different writer took over or when the arc took a different turn, all of that sort of just gets lost.
Well, specifically with the Sandman omnibuses that you brought up earlier, that has definitely been the biggest regret of my entire comic book career. I own the first three.
And you heard it here. You heard it here, fans. I am not the first person to be knocking Neil Gaiman. I am not the last person to be knocking Neil Gaiman books on this podcast.
I mean, they're
and like, we didn't bring up Sandman Overture until right now.
The library editions are like $100 each. I tell people that I'm a Sandman fan, but, like, I don't even know which books I liked. Like, I can't even talk to people who haven't read these library editions because they have no idea what I'm talking about. And I probably will, like, never finish Sandman just because these individual collections are so difficult to get through, and it takes me weeks and weeks just because they're so massive, and, like, I have to really, like, take care of them, or because they're super nice and leather-bound. Like, I don't want anything to happen to them. Like, they're almost... These collections are almost more fragile than, like, single issues.
Right. And I think what you're getting at, which is an interesting point, is that sometimes the way that trades are collected, and this definitely works against trades, sometimes the way trades are collected, or however you enter into the game, thinking about it or not, you might end up in a situation where, like I said earlier, if you think that those huge Walking Dead omnibuses are the way to go, and page per page, if you want to count, you know, how much you're paying, you're definitely getting a deal. You might really enjoy that format, and it might be cost effective, but at a certain point, you've got to stop and think to yourself, these books are huge. So when I catch up on this book, how the fuck long is it going to be before the next one rolls out? Is it going to be a year? Is it going to be a year and a half? I mean, look at this thing. It holds 40 or 50 issues. I might be waiting a couple years for the next one. And of course, depending upon the publisher, your trades might end up on a sporadic schedule. Some publishers are different about it than others. Like, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but Image has been really, really good at, like, I was shocked when, with Descender, issue 6 came out, and then the trade came out, like, 2 weeks later, and it had issue 6 in it. And I was absolutely shocked that it was that quick of a turnaround time. And you don't always see that. I don't know if you guys have noticed this, or sometimes when your book, if you're collecting something in trade, when it goes to a much longer arc, they're going to wait until that arc finishes to give you a trade, obviously. So you might be used to waiting 4 or 5 months to get your trade for that book, but then all of a sudden your trade goes on some crazy 8-issue arc, and next thing you know, they're not going to want to split it up because they want the whole thing in the trade continuously, which I guess I understand. But next thing you know, you're waiting a real long time wondering where the heck your trade is.
Yeah.
And of course, that's weird. And then on top of that, even better, sometimes your book doesn't get collected in trade. Now, I say your book, but I guess what I'm saying is maybe, you know, for example, I guess maybe some people saw Infinity Man and the Forever People or whatever it was called. Paul, I'm sure you remember this, and said that book looks kind of weird or interesting, and maybe I'll just wait for the trade, which is not a bad idea, except it never happened. It never went to trade. DC Comics decided that they're vastly underselling books just wouldn't even go to trade. And so, of course, with trade, there's the danger that whatever you're waiting to go to trade might not actually happen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, in situations like that, that's one of the good things about digital now is that that book's always going to be available. In the past, right. If a book went out of print, good luck trying to find the single issues. You know, at least nowadays, if there's something out there that you want to read, whether it gets into trade or not, you can probably find it digitally. There's always going to be a way to find that stuff. So, yeah.
Well, we've been discussing this huge trade versus single thing, and I think we've definitely brought up a couple different aspects of it that are valid, and we've gotten heated, and we've gotten mad, and people have called each other names, I think. But I think one thing we didn't bring up that much in this discussion yet, and I want to hear your guys' thoughts on it, are the issue of variant covers. For those who don't know, and we've just discussed them briefly before, variant covers are the idea that whatever book you're buying in singles will have a default cover that most people get. And usually if you have a pull, you will get the default cover unless you request otherwise from your shop. And then on top of the default cover, your book might have additional different covers that you can request. Some will require you paying a certain fee. Others are free. You merely need to ask for them. Others require that you have a subscription to the book. And some require that your shop order either a lot of that book or a lot of a different book, and it gets weird and complicated. Sometimes they have to order 60 copies of a completely different book, and then they get this cover that they're willing to charge you probably a lot of money for. But that's how variants work. I tend to like them a lot. But of course, if you're really into trades, variants are a non-issue. So where do variant covers stand for you guys? Are they a thing? Are they not a thing? Do you not really care? Are you mostly apathetic, but then sometimes something shows up? Where are you guys in terms of the whole variant cover argument before I go crazy about it?
You know, I'm of two minds of it on this topic. You know, it can be fun sometimes. I know DC has been doing like theme months. Marvel, not so much. They do it occasionally, but DC really has this thing where they'll do themed months where the variants are all either done by the same artist. They had Darwin Cook not too long ago, or they'll be themed on a particular topic. They're, for October, they do monster-themed variants. That can be kind of fun. I don't like the idea of variants being used to generate a sort of false scarcity. You know, if there's... Right. This is, we've talked about it briefly, but, you know, something like Dark Knight 3 that's coming out next month, there are so many variant covers, and so many of them are limited to a particular store or limited to, if you order 5,000 copies, you get this, could get this one variant. That's an issue. I have a problem with that. For my personal collection, it can be a problem if it's throwing off what I like about single issues, which is, you know, sort of having the continual run. You know, if there's a cover artist that's doing unique style for covers of a particular series, I don't like to have that broken up. You know, it only happens a few times. By and large, it's not a problem if it's a variant cover, but one that really sticks out in my mind is Action Comics recently. They were part of the variant month where they were celebrating 75 years of the Green Lantern. So all of a sudden, I'm buying Action Comics because it's a Superman book and I love Superman, but I pick up the issue and before I even realize what comic it was, I pull it out of my pull box, you know, at the store, and there's the Green Lantern. I'm like, I'm not reading Green Lantern. Why is this in my box? I'm like, oh, it's Action Comics. Why is Green Lantern front and center on Action Comics? That kind of throws me off, but that's more just like a personal nitpick because I like the sort of, you know, continuity of having the same cover or same character on the cover if that's the book that they're in. So, but by and large, I'm not too picky. But what about you, James? Do you have a problem with variant covers that you'd like to air your grievances about right here?
Well, I pretty much will pick up any variant that I can get fairly easily. Like, I know for a fact that the store that I go to, there's a line of about 20 guys who get there probably half an hour before the store even opens, and they're lined out the door to get their variants for Spider-Man or Star Wars or whatever it is. And I'm not that hardcore about it, but if I do see a variant, and if they are both about the same price, I'm pretty much going to go with the variant every time. Especially Sex Criminals has been some particularly memorable variant covers.
It's a very PC way of putting it.
Yeah. But I just think it's a lot of fun, and like I just like having something slightly harder to find. I don't know. This maybe is just like my subconscious thought. I'm going to like run into another guy who's also collecting the series I am, and I'll have the variant. He'll be like, oh, man, I really wish I had gotten that variant. It's so much cooler than the normal one. I mean, in reality, it's never going to happen, but that's how I think about it, I guess.
Okay. Now, I have to ask, when you say you're doing variants, are you doubling up? Are you doing the dreaded doubling up, or are you merely taking the variant in place of the original?
Yeah, I definitely just get the variant. I see no reason to get both. I mean, I'm not reselling these or anything, so it's more for my personal collection. I like to have a slightly more interesting cover, I guess.
Okay, so I'm not trying to load this question at you, but it doesn't so it doesn't bother you, for example, when you've got a series that normally for a certain arc or maybe for even longer than an arc will have the same consistent artist on the front cover. You're completely okay with the idea, and that's fine if you are, even though it sounds like maybe I'm suggesting you shouldn't be or reevaluating things. I'm not. it's totally okay with you that month to month you're going to have a completely different looking cover by a completely different looking artist, because don't get me wrong, in some regards that is somewhat appealing, but that's something that not only I guess doesn't bother you, but it's something I guess you're sort of aiming for.
I mean, when I'm talking variant covers, I think about Sex Criminals specifically, but for a lot of them, they'll have variant covers every week, so I kind of will start collecting all variants for some books. But no, I guess it doesn't really bother me too much to have a different artist on the front. And for Image books, at least, I know there's like cover A, cover B, so it's not even like a variant per se, it's just a variation on the cover, and that I really like, because you still get the consistency of the artist, but you kind of feel like you maybe have something that somebody else wouldn't have.
Sure, sure. Even with like cover A, cover B, or even with DC's theme months, you're completely right. The variants are very easy to come by, and it's definitely not any sort of a struggle to get your hands on them. But they are, if I remember correctly, they are sort of a 2-to-1 ratio most of the time. Which, like I said, it's massively easy to find, but they are ever so slightly, you know, worth. I shouldn't say worth more, but they're ever so slightly more in demand, I guess, in theory. No, that's interesting, because personally, I'm of different minds on this. I think just like Paul, there's something really weird and odd when all of a sudden, I completely agree with you, Paul. It was Green Lantern month that set me off.
That's right.
All of a sudden, I'm looking at, I want to say it was you know what? It was the reverse. It was Batman month. And I was looking at Green Lantern, and it was John Stewart on the front cover, and there was Batman. No breathing apparatus, mind you. No spacesuit, mind you. So I'm already worried for Batman. Things do not look good. This looks like a very interesting issue in my mind. It looks like Batman is potentially 10 seconds from dead, and here he is with John Stewart. John Stewart, relatively unconcerned regarding Batman's plight. And it's weird. It's weird. And you're right. You look at that cover, and as we've talked about before, a lot of times you look at the front cover of a book and you think, okay, this is sort of setting the tone, setting the mood, giving me an idea of where this book is going to go or what sort of emotion or arc it's going to have. And then you look at a cover like that, and first off, you wonder if it's even your book. when you figure out that it's your book, you're wondering, well, this should be Batman going after the Joker in this issue. What the fuck happened? This is really odd. And so it can be jarring. And of course, you know, for a hardcore collector, there's also the side of that says, okay, for this arc, I've got 6 covers that are the normal cover, and then I've got this weird looking thing. And again, as we've talked about a bajillion times before, one should never really get into comics with the idea that, well, I need to be worried because eventually I'm going to sell these for billions of dollars, or I need to be concerned about this or that. Do what you want. Read what you want. If it looks good, buy it. If it doesn't look good, don't buy it. Whatever. It's all about you, I guess. But there's still that nagging sense that says, like, when I look at my arc, there's one issue that's wrong. And it is true. Even though I've said don't believe this, but it is true that if you were eventually going to try to sell your comics, that sort of thing would fuck things up. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, but that sort of thing would completely screw you over. And oddly enough, having the quote-unquote harder-to-find variant would probably screw you over even more than if you had all of the originals.
Yeah, if you're trying to sell a complete run or something like that, that can be a problem, I'm guessing. And even if you're not selling them, it's like you said, it's kind of just like a personal preference, you know. That happened to me recently, and I was actually tempted to buy the issue twice in this scenario. I went to my shop, and issue 9 of Transformers versus G.I. Joe's wasn't in my pull box. Sometimes happens, stuff gets overlooked, you know. But they had a copy on the shelf, on the stand, but it was a variant cover. It wasn't by Tom Scioli.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh man. So I'm like, well, I still want to read the issue. That's more important than the cover. So I grabbed that one. The next week,
I was going to ask who the heck did they have doing a variant of that? Because that book has such a signature style, I can't even imagine.
You know, it's one of those things
what they would do.
They always have a secondary cover, and it's always somebody. And I don't know who did this particular one, but that book always has a secondary cover. But I've never gotten. I've always gotten the Scioli book in my cover in my pull box. But this month it didn't happen, but no big deal. I just wanted to read the issue. It was a great issue, obviously. I went back to the store the next week, and they had put issue 9 with the Scioli cover in my pull box. So it either got put in somebody else's box, and they figured it out. So I was like, ugh. I'm like, should I buy it twice? That was the immediate reaction. I'm like, should I buy this issue again just so I can have the complete run with Scioli's covers? I decided not to. I ended up giving it back and explaining what happened. Giving it back to the shop and explaining what happened, but that was a scenario. It was like I was really tempted to buy an issue twice just so I could keep the continuity of having the same artist on the covers issue to issue.
Yeah,
it's a sickness, Nick. It's a problem. It's a sickness.
No, it's a sickness, and the problem is it sounds like you slightly overcome it, and I'm here to tell you that I need the vaccine for variant covers, because not only do I really love some of them, but occasionally, I end up on both sides of the fence, where I'm like, I want to preserve the sanctity of how this arc looks, but then I also like the variant. So yes, on occasion, I do double up on occasion. I know.
It's okay, Nick. This is a safe place. This is a safe place.
Yeah. No, it's not a healthy habit to have, but I guess probably the biggest month where that might have run rampant. And I mean, of course, it was Darwin Cook month when it was Darwin Cook variant covers for DC. Yeah, I went after as many as I could, and I wasn't about to, swap that out for my normal looking covers, but that is what happened. Variant covers are tricky things, and it gets even more tricky, like you were saying, when you end up with a moment where your shop accidentally either orders the wrong one, or they end up giving you the wrong one, and then you're in a real jam, because then you've got to actually figure out how you're gonna handle things. Like I said, I got the wrong Book of Death this month. Yeah, it is kind of sucky to not have Kerry Nord covers for all four, but maybe I'll still find a way to make a deal with that Grayson cover for Jordan if I can live with that Grayson cover. So yeah, no, otherwise variant covers are interesting. I think they're fun. They can get out of hand. But it is interesting that it is sort of an idea or a debate that one doesn't even have to mull over if you buy trades. So you're looking for another reason to be pro-trade, it means that you get to get completely out of the variant cover game. You are out. Like, you are out, and unlike most movies, no one's going to drag you back in 5 years later, and then you get to have a narrative about, I thought I was out of the game, but I got back in for one last gig.
Yeah. Save yourself the mental anguish and just go with trades, is what you're saying.
Well, in that, yeah, absolutely. And then that enters into the whole issue of another facet of the trade versus single argument, which we're not even going to get into right now, of back matter. Sometimes I buy trades based on whether I know the publisher cares a lot about giving me all the variant covers and giving me all of the concept art, because some do and some don't. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole nother, can of worms to get into. But, yeah, variant covers. They sometimes they glow in the dark. Sometimes they have Halloween characters. Sometimes they cost more money than they should, and I still sometimes occasionally buy them. And that being said, I'm looking very forward to Ninjak in 2 months, where they'll be glow in the dark. So yes. Awesome. Yeah, variant covers. It's a thing, and if you buy the previews catalog, you can look at it and you can request them, and then your life will turn into an unadulterated mess.
Thanks for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast, a production of Destroy the Cyborg. This episode was produced by Mike Rappin, co-produced by Nick White, and edited by Xander Riggs. This week's music was brought to you by Young Bay, Skylar Spence, and Infinity Shred. If you'd like to keep current with the I Read Comic Books podcast, You can subscribe to it on iTunes and Stitcher. And while you're there, take a quick moment to rate us. If you have a topic you'd like us to talk about, or if you just want to say hi, you can email the show at cyborg@destroythesybe.org. Also, feel free to shoot us a message on Twitter at @destroythesybe, check out our subreddit at ireadcomicbooks.reddit.com, and follow us on Tumblr at destroythecyborg.tumblr.com. This Saturday, November 7th, the video game crew here at Destroy the Cyborg will be participating in the charity event Extra Life to help raise money for local children's hospitals. Links for our Twitch streams, where we will be marathoning for 24 hours, can be found in the show notes, as well as links to the team's Extra Life donation page. If you're available this weekend, we encourage you to find groups of Extra Lifers near you and support your own local children's hospitals. Look for an upcoming post on the site to watch our streams and see some of the faces behind the voices on this podcast. Hope to see you there. And as always, thanks for listening.
Now it's oddly quiet. That's great. I was gonna quick ask you, Paul. Do you absolutely abhor all elements of the James Bond franchise? I am curious to hear your interesting answer here, because I find the people that obsess over all of it and especially love all of it, those people generally scare me, and I usually don't get along with them.
I remember when GoldenEye came out and seeing that in the theater, and that was kind of my first exposure to James Bond.
Sure.
And obviously played the GoldenEye video game for fucking hours on end on N64 when I was in high school. And I remember trying to go back and watch some of the older James Bond movies and thought they were just dull as dirt. It was just never been my thing. So
yeah,
I think I can probably count the ones I've seen on one hand. So
Okay. Yeah. Have you seen all of the Craig stuff? Or
no, I haven't seen none of those. I haven't seen one of those.
None of those.
No.
Okay. I would be really interested to hear your opinion on this. I think what I need to do, I think I need to start like a blog or a project, or we can start some side podcast where it's just people getting mad about movies that other people haven't seen, and the other person getting mad about movies the other person hasn't seen. And so okay. It's basically people forcing other people to watch movies. And then both of them coming back the next week with a report, and both are just absolutely like furious that the other person made them waste their time. I think there's actually real potential there, unless someone's already done that. So, like most of my ideas, I'm sure someone has. But I would find your opinion interesting on the Craig movies, because I do think he's a pretty interesting actor that's brought a new dimension to it that Pierce Brosnan didn't. Because like Pierce Brosnan was like, yo dog, I read the notes on what people love, so we're gonna put some talking cars in this, and there's gonna be some nifty gadgets, and I'm gonna sleep with the approved average of 3.5 people per film, as this survey suggests, and in between some stuff might blow up. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only part of GoldenEye I remember is him driving that tank through the streets of, like, Moscow or whatever city they were in.
So see, I don't know why, exciting. But I always remember Alan Cumming with the pen. He was always flicking the pen around nonstop. That's what always comes to mind for me for some weird reason. I would definitely be interested. Yeah, go watch Skyfall. It's on. It was. It might still be on Netflix.
Okay.
You don't need to watch the two before it. I think Xander would tell you that even from a filmmaking perspective, regardless of how you feel about Bond as a legacy or as a character, it has a lot of merit in other technical things.
Okay.
Right, Xander?
Yes, I will go on and on about that movie. Don't get me started.
Okay.
It should have won Best Cinematography. It didn't.
Interesting.
That shot when he pulls up to the family estate is just amazing.
There's so many good shots in that. Oh my God. I love Paul, watch that movie.
The fight scene. Yeah. Okay. The fight scene at the end where they're having to booby trap the house and shit. Oh my God.
There's so many good scenes in that. Just look at, watch that movie and pay attention to color. And your mind will be blown.
Interesting. Who directed that?
It was Mendes, wasn't it? Sam Mendes?
Okay. I think that sounds right.
Yeah. They brought him on board for that one. I'm trying to remember who directed Casino Royale now. I wonder why I'm blanking on that. You know what? That might have been Mendes as well. And then I forget who they got for Quantum of Solace, which was the one in between, but that was a hardcore clunker.
That's like the worst title. That's like the worst movie title I've ever heard.
It's what a weird, it's one of those movie titles where someone, like one of the people they surveyed was like, people are going to think this is fucking deep. And then someone else is like, people don't have any fucking clue what this means.
It means nothing. It's like an,
it means fucking like, shit.
Sounds like an episode of the original Star Trek, like from the 60s, where they just throw like fancy science sounding words next to each other and like, all right, that's... Sounds
just,
technical.
Just what happened to Goldfinger? Where it's like people like gold. And it also sounds kind of dirty. Yep. So here's the movie title:
Octopussy. You know? I mean, come on. Yeah. If you name a movie Octopussy, people are going to want to go see it. I mean, that's
there's eight of something. People right. like numbers. It's obviously got another overt word that you can brush off as being innocuous. We're gonna call it Octopussy. Come on, it's not that hard. Moonraker. People love the moon, right? And raking. It sounds kind of maybe vaguely violent, so Moonraker. But Quantum of Solace, it sounds like someone got drunk in a philosophy class and was like, these are words that people think are deep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Paul's like, I wrote that movie title. Fuck you. It's just scribbled in one of Paul's philosophy texts, that's and then it. Someone like cut, copy, pasted it out.
Made a marginal note in the Derrida text. Yeah, yeah. Quantum of yeah. Solace. That, yeah,
this has potential. I don't even remember understand what that movie. Xander, do you even remember what that movie was? It was like someone stealing water,
water monopoly,
like
in
a
the
water
desert.
Monopoly. He had like a solar panel farm or something. It was who fucking understood that movie?
I certainly didn't.
They interviewed Daniel Craig about it, and of course at this point, like, he was still Bond, right? So it's like, he's still the name and face of the franchise and everything, and he still came forward and he said, we were, like, rewriting the script on the set, we were rewriting scenes minutes before we filmed them, he's like, I was rewriting my script as we went, and he's like, and I'm garbage, and he's like, and I have no business rewriting the script, and I was still doing it, and it was still a mess, and I was like, okay.
He's like, sorry, man.
I mean,
I thought
you made
Casino
the point.
Royale was at least decent, but Quantum of Solace was just like unwatchable.
Casino Royale was great, and that was a really good beginning to him as
there are some people that'll still tell you they think Casino Royale is better than Skyfall, but
they're wrong.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it probably launched Mads Mikkelsen's international career. If you want to go all sorts of pop culture tangents, but. Anyway, so that's Bond, and not even vaguely related to, comics. Although, you know what? Let's bring this full circle, because don't you even fucking try to challenge me to not bring this full circle, because I am so used to people saying, you need to bring this back around, Nick, because you are nowhere close to this discussion. So I will. This month, James Bond number one is launching from Dynamite Entertainment, so all y'all can go fuck right, yourselves. You that said, you're not going to bring this around. So... there you go, and I'm not going to pull it, but I will probably still get it, because that's how I trick myself into saying, you know what, your pull list is under control.
It's a good way to do it.
I buy Grayson every month, and it's not on my pull. It should be. It's just a psychological thing.